with let's say the Rosh, okay? Alright, so in the argument between Rabbi Yosef and Abaye, Abaye makes the point, look, if you think, you know, that it's not important for her, you know, to that she's not required to marry the Yavam, then in that case, okay, he says Chalitza Nomilesa Boy, then she shouldn't require also Chalitza, if that's the case. The Potarachmono, right? Because the Torah came along and made her Potter, in other words, from having to get a get or a Chalitza or anything like that, and the fact is Sharia the Yishacher, the Cholinyon. The fact is that she can marry another person, right, without any strings attached. Okay? Shateitse mibesa. Acha shanim sobo evasdova. In other words, that she should be able, you know, to get a get from the husband after she has been found, you know, guilt, after she has been suspected of evasdova. So, getting back to the Gemara now. So he said to him, as Rabbi Yosef said to him, look, if the husband is still there, milo by a get, right? Wouldn't she require a get if the husband were alive? So, hashtonami, if the husband now is dead, so, tiboy chalitza, let her require chalitza. In other words, as long as we have to have something official, let it be an official act. Either she gets a get, if the husband is alive and he finds her Evasdova, right? Or if he finds some Evasdova in her that he's suspicious of, then let her have Chalitza from the brother-in-law. Alright, this is the first reasoning. Now we'll see that there are other ways that they interpret this, okay? The Isti Amr, he says, there are those who say that this is what the discussion was. Omar Rav Yosef said, Rachmono Omar, the Torah said, the Yotzam Ebeiso, that, you know, she leaves his home, in other words, she's divorced by the husband, right? The whole of the house of the Yishacher, right? So, why does the Torah want this to happen? So he says, there's a reason for it. The reason is, the Loyal Listore Lebeise. The reason being that they don't want a woman like this to destroy her household. In other words, if she acts in a way that brings shame and disrepute to the family, then in that case it's better that, you know, that the marriage break up. Okay? The Adam wrote, but you say, Tisyamim Nami Yibumi, she should still, what? Be married to the Yavam, to the brother-in-law. After all, isn't that the same family, right? So in other words, here, if she was doing something that the husband was unhappy with, he warned her, and he said, don't. So you want that if he should happen to die, that the brother-in-law should marry her? It's still a reflection. It would still destroy the family, whether it's with the husband or whether it's with the husband's brother. So Abaye said, that's the case. Then let her not marry anybody after this. Why? The loy tistere levese, so that she shouldn't destroy the home of the new husband. So he said to her, hey, he says, hold it. He says, mi kora minin lo alev al kache. Can we force her to be married to him against his will? Rashi. Says, Ilu Yisei Laval, right? Says, Ni Mishtariya Belo Get. How can, you know, if the husband is alive, how can she be free, literally, without a get? Hoksiv, it's written in the Torah, what? The Chosav Lo Sefer Karisus, right? Afilu Motzubo Evasdova, Krisus Bayer. Even if he found something unseemly in her, now we're not, in other words, point that Rashi is making is he may have other reasons for wanting to divorce the wife. You understand? Even if her conduct was above reproach. But there may be some other reason. He didn't like her personality or whatever it is, you know. So, in any case, how can he dissolve the marriage? The only way to dissolve the marriage is what? With a sefer krisis, with a get. So, hashtanami, by a chalitza. So, if that's the case, if she requires a get, then in this case, she should require a chalitza, the yovim became baal tai, because the yovim, the brother-in-law, is now replacing the brother in this relationship, and therefore she should require a chalitza. Alright, isti amre, there's another interpretation. The hochi shani Rav Yosef le'elach, this is the reason why Rav Yosef said previously that, why a get? It's the little illustrator basic, right? Or the soita also, you know, that she destroys the house. It says, so see what the Baal of the Gershom Ebeiso, right? The Torah commanded that a husband should divorce his wife. Kishe motzobo evas dova, right? Kohecha deloy listere lebeisa. Because if he finds that her conduct is very unseemly, very not right, right? Then in that case, she's going to destroy the family, destroy the household. Kidom ala'el, as we learned before, Daf Gimel over there, that it's Zinuso Bebeso Kikarya Lishumshima. We learned over there that Zinus, in other words, if there is adultery in a household, then it's like a worm inside the cabbage. Okay? In other words, it keeps on picking, and little by little it just destroys the marriage. So, they said, you know, in that case, and then so the Yavama too. So then he says, okay, but what are we going to do? He says, Mikora Minan Alei, the Mitzvah Baal Kochi, can we force her to be married against his will? To either the Yavam, Aminan Lei, that we say to the Yavam, it says, Mitzvahs Yibum Kodemes, the Mitzvahs Mitzvah. In other words, we are trying to force, are we going to try to force this woman to be married to the brother-in-law, even if the brother-in-law doesn't want it, by applying the principle. Now, you see, they say that the mitzvah is a greater mitzvah, right? It says that mitzvah yibum kodem is the mitzvah chalitza, that the mitzvah of marrying the widow takes priority over the mitzvah of chalitza, but this would be true when, if it weren't a case, you know, that motzvah evas tova, that there's something wrong with the marriage. Avol b'ha, however, here in this particular case, asur lememolei, it is prohibited to us to tell him what you must marry this woman. Umemela ashmein and kra, and that's the case. Obviously, we now learn that the Torah is telling us the also the Yavama, right? That the also the Yavama maybe that is prohibited to have her marry the brother-in-law. The lo shayach ba yibum, because it's not right for her for the yibum to take place. The havya keishes och, and in that case, if yibum is out of the picture, and in that particular case, she would be like an Ashes Och, like, you know, the wife of a brother, Shelo Bimkom Mitzvah, which, as I said, is prohibited. In other words, under normal circumstances, a woman cannot marry her husband's brother. I mean, even assuming that the brother dies, but she cannot marry. The only way, you know, would be with Yibim, and Yibim we don't practice anymore today, and Yibim is out of the question over here, as we say. So, what is it going to do? You're going to leave her at Hefka? No. What you have to do is to give her chalitza so she can reconstruct her own life afterwards. Okay? All right, I think we'll stop at this point. I'm getting a little bit tired, a little bit hoarse. Okay. Tonight is February the 5th. And we are currently on Dav Vav at the very top of Amud Aleph. I'll review just for a couple of minutes.
the last inyan that we were talking about last week, and then we shall continue. Okay. The last item that we had was a discussion of the latter part of the first Mishnah, where it says, V'yameis chaylatzis, if you remember. In other words, that if the husband dies prior to the time that she has the mayim hamorim before she's tested, then in that particular case, she gets chalitza from her brother-in-law, if she had no child, of course, I'm assuming also that the late husband had a brother, but she is not misyabemis, she does not enter into marriage with him through yibam. Ah, shalom aleichem. How are you? How are you?
Okay.
Good.
Sorry.
Okay, just in time. I'm giving you a slight summary of the last thing you discussed.
Okay, great,
okay?
Great.
So, you bring us to Rishat Shalom, Eretz Yisrael?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
See, number of people. Probably Uzi Bitan, Miriam Bitan.
Oh, yes, yes.
Shmuel Amasi, Udina Amasi. Everybody.
How do you get it all in 1 week?
It's hard. It's difficult.
Right.
They would run in.
Yeah. Is Rona coming, by the way? No, she can't make it again. Is she feeling okay?
Yeah.
Okay, we're on Dov Vav. Omid Al at the top of the page, but I'm summarizing the last thing that we learned last week, okay? I'm summarizing the bottom of Daf Hey Omid Beis, and leading to the top of Omid Al upon the Daf. Okay? Alright. So, the Mishnah then states specifically that in the case of this woman who has been suspected and warned, etc., etc., but if the husband died before taking her to Yerushalayim, then in that particular case, she gets chalitza from his brother in case, as we said before, she has no children, and the brother-in-law and her husband has a brother, but she does not marry him through Yibam. And the Gemara wanted to know, why shouldn't she? Why shouldn't she be available as a wife through Yibam, right? Marry the brother-in-law. So we had, at this point, two different explanations by Rav Yosef. Explanation number one was based on the verse where it says, V'yotzum v'beisom, that when she leaves his home, v'holchav ha'yisodish acher, then she is to go and become the wife of another man. Alright? So the point that he was making was that the word acher is there for a very significant reason, namely to indicate the fact that she has to, if she's going to marry, it has to be to an ish acher, in other words, a person other than the husband's brother. This is the way he interpreted. Of course, one of the difficulties with it is simply the fact that the pasuk itself deals really with the case of divorce rather than with soka. But the answer is that in this particular case, the reasoning is that where she is already, considered as a soka, at least she's been warned, she's been told not to go into seclusion with, the man whom her husband warns her against and so on. So it's as if she had already committed something, an Erbaz Dover or something like that, and therefore, as a result, it's not right for her to be married to him, because the verse singles out the word Acher. This was explanation number one that he gave, even though it was not 100% satisfactory, because according to Abaye, so why shouldn't she? After all, she hasn't been accused of anything yet. I mean, nothing happened, so in that case she should be able, but the Mishnah states specifically no. Alright. Then there's another one. It says over there the Ista Amrei, another explanation about what did Rabbi Yosef say. So the second explanation is that again, based on the verse, we also the base of a whole voice of the Shacher, right? So here the question is, why should she leave the house? In other words, why should she be divorced by the husband. Why should he put her away, you know, that she doesn't live with him anymore? So the answer is, because the Lola Listra the basic, that she should not destroy his home. How to destroy the home? So as we read the Rashi last week, that we see that in the previous page they spoke about Zidnusa, that you know, adultery is like a worm that eats away, like a in the cabbage or the carrot or whatever, the repak, you know. But the point is that it destroys it. And so therefore, improper conduct on the part of the wife will also destroy the home. Okay? So, Abayin objected, as we see in the second line from the bottom on the previous page. He says, why shouldn't she? Omalei Abayin, look, Elamiyato, he says, the Achelu is the Nose. So let her not marry anybody, because if she's already suspected of destroying one home, so one guarantee that we have that she won't destroy another home, right? So the answer that Rabbi Yosef gave to him is, no, we cannot force somebody to marry her against his will. In other words, we can't say to the Yobam, you know, because Abaye's objection, why can't she marry the Yobam, right? So we can't say to the Yobam, you must marry her, because mitzvahs yibum kodemus is what we had last week in the Rashi, the last thing that we, well, we didn't hear, we didn't read it. But anyway, this is what we had, that he said, you know, that you can't force a Yobam to marry her against his will, because in the final analysis it's no mitzvah to marry her off to the Yobam under the circumstances where, you know, she has been suspected of destroying his brother's home. Okay? The Yikud Yamri, now we are on the top line over there. Okay. The Yikud Yamre, and there are those who say a different interpretation of what Rabbi Yosef was arguing. He says, Omar Rabbi Yosef, he says, HaKosov Keroi Acher, the Pasuk himself, comes along and says that a second husband for her is an Acher, right? And why? She'ein Ben Zugir Shavishin, because he is not really like the equal. This is how we have to understand the word benzug in this particular case. Literally, you know, the person who is coupled together. It's not really the equal in this particular case of the shorishon, of the first husband that she had. The one, you know, who wants to get rid of her because he accuses her of infidelity. Why? Shezeh hotzi rishon beiso, because the first one got rid of Risha, or if you wish, a Risha, right? An evil woman in this home. They got rid of evil in this home. The Zech, this Risha, the Zech, so. And the second guy takes it now into his home by marrying her, right? So, if we say, in other words, that the second husband is only getting a bad bargain to begin with, so Viat Amrit is Yabim Nami Yifume. You want to tell me that therefore she should yet get Yivam from the brother in law? Why should he be stuck, in other words, with someone who is a Rishon? So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, wait a minute, I got an objection. He says, Elo Miyato. If this is the case, let's examine this a little further. This says the Acher Umeis Padevonim. Let's say that she does marry somebody else, right? And then the second husband dies without having any children, right? Lotus Yabi, you want to tell me now that she should not get Yibim from the new brother-in-law? Da'akosukro Acher, because of the fact that the Pasuk calls him Acher, Ish Acher, is that the reason why? So, Abay Dahai, you know, concerning this one, says, Mihor, B'shem Tov, Avakaima. How can you say something like that when it could be that in connection with Hai, in this case means the second husband, Nevertheless, maybe she has developed a good reputation living with the second husband. So in that case, why should we object to the fact that if the second husband dies without ever having produced any children with her, that in that case that she should marry, she shouldn't marry the Yibam. She now has, in other words, restored her reputation, and that being the case, it should be considered a mitzvah to marry her. So, this is how the argument stands right now. Okay, let's take a look at the Rashi up to this particular point, beginning with Hakosu Kroyati. Okay, it says, Lemi Shanosu, right? Pasuk calls her Achir in connection with the one who married her. Beyat Amrit, and you say, Tistabi, that she should get Yibam. Isrami Alei Bal Kochi, and force the Yavim to marry her against the will. So then, as we see, Abaya comes along and he says, and so supposing this is the Achir, that she's married to a second guy, right? Shegir Shavisha, where the first husband actually has divorced her. Shemotzeba Evas Dovor, right? Vinise, and he found something that he didn't like in her, right? He found something literally lewdness in her. So Vinise, and then she wants to get married again. So lo tisyabim, she shouldn't get married to the yavim, to the brother-in-law. Hashto name acheru, because now he is also an achim. V'yein ben zuga shel rishon, and he's not the same as the first one. Im yisa eno, if he marries her. The karom is leze alei b'mitzvas yivim, and you're forcing to have mitzvas yivim in the case of the second husband. So Gabe Dehai says he is acher as far as achim shel ze, but b'shem tov habakaimo. In other words, she has developed a good reputation living with the second man. The Yikola Memo, we could say, not only that, the Hodrobo, that she did to Shuva. The Yain Korui Acher, and she's no longer deserving of the word Acher. Elo Shadosa Mitocha Munos Ogerushin Almisha Kilkolo Tahdo. But rather, he marries her either as a widow or as a divorcee, if she has, committed something against him. So, at any rate, as we can see how the argument is running right now, that with Rav Yosef, he's trying to justify the fact, that the Mishnah says that Choletz is for long Yitzhak, whereas Abaye keeps on putting up these questions to show that, in his opinion, none of the reasons that we have advanced so far should really justify what the Mishnah said, namely that she should be able to marry the Yibam. But, as we saw, there are also three different scenarios that were presented. So along comes Rava now, and he has his own opinion. Rava Omar, he says, Kal v'chomer, says, I can prove to you with a Kal v'chomer that im nesra v'muto lo v'osa lo l'kol shekein. Says, if we accept the previous reasoning, then we will have to say that, hi, how are you? If she has become prohibited to her husband, who was permitted to marry her. In other words, we're talking about the first husband. As we said before, what happens, the minute that something happens, and, he has warned her, and he says, that you violated it by secluding yourself with the man. So, at that particular point, as we've already said, she is now prohibited to live with him as husband and wife. She can't live with him anymore. Not until he takes her to Yerushalayim, and he has to go through the ordeal of the Mayim HaMa'orim. Whereas we had said that if, let's say, he had failed to warn her, then she not only, continues to live with him, or if no witnesses ever showed up, then in that case too, you know, so that you know, she would continue to live with him as husband and wife, and if he was a kohen, she could eat truma and things like that. So we say over here, now look, he was mutala before, right? He was permitted to live with her, you know, as long as she had a good reputation, and you know, she had not committed something which would make her prohibited to him. So he says, in this, Rabbi Mutala, if she has now become prohibited to her husband, who was permitted to marry her to begin with, so Ba'asa law, call she came. Then, in that particular case, in the case of a man who is prohibited to her, all the more reason. So what, who is the Asa law, call she came? The answer is the husband's brother. As we stated before, and looking the Rashi at the top, that under normal circumstances, a woman cannot marry her husband's brother. Under normal circumstances. Certainly, let's say that the husband had divorced her. Okay? Would she be permitted to marry her husband's brother? Absolutely not. This is considered, you know, a case of, you know, one of the aroyas, okay, going down the, you know, the list of prohibited marriages. The only time that she could marry the husband's brother is only under the circumstances of yibum. And that is a special law that the Torah set, you know, in order to keep the original husband's name alive in case with no children. Okay. So, right now, the brother-in-law is prohibited. So, if the brother-in-law is prohibited, in other words, he is also law, so how can we say that she should marry him through Yibam afterwards? When she has first become Nesra, she has already become prohibited to the husband's brother. So in that case, we should say, no kolshekein, all the more reason that she should be prohibited from marrying the brother-in-law, the other, okay? All right. So, Rava now then has this theory of imnesra the mutalor, right? Then ba'osalor lekoshke. She is prohibited. In the case of somebody, you know, who was to begin with permitted to her, certainly to someone who is prohibited to her, all the more reason that she can't marry him. So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, wait a minute, I dispute that statement. Elomiyat, if that's the case, let's take the case of Kain Godol, Shekidesh Eswalmona, Vameis. The Kain Godol betrothed a widow, and then he died, right? V'yeshlo ach kohen hedyo, and he has another brother. Naturally, he's a kohen, but naturally he's a kohen hedyo. He's, you know, one of the ordinary kohanim. In other words, anybody other than the kohen gadol is a kohen hedyo. Okay, they have high ranks and so on. Like, let's say the skam, in other words, the person who is like second in command to the kohen gadol, or the mishuach melchama. In other words, a kohen is appointed sort of like a temporary kohen gadol to lead the armies to victory and things like that. But nevertheless, as far as the reference to the kohen gadol himself, there's only one kohen gadol. Everybody else would fall into the category of kohen gadol. All right. So they say, let us suppose, says Abaye, that the kohen gadol betrothed a widow. He died. And he has a brother who's a kohen hedyo, right? So, lo tishyabe, we would have to say that she is not allowed to marry the brother-in-law, right? Why? He says, if nesra b'vuta lo, ba'asa lo le'kol shekhen, right? If she is prohibited to one who is permitted to her, so ba'asa lo, somebody who is prohibited to her, like all she can, all the more reason that she can't marry him. So she can't have him. Yeah.
So let's just see if Emma's. What's the problem?
Right. Okay. Problem is.
Next
that
we call a bummer, especially the way
sure.
Rashi frames it.
Yeah. So that's on Kamachom, but it's based upon a fallacy. Fallacy is. Can the Kohen Gadol marry an Almana?
Yes. It's Chal. Kedushin is Chal.
That's correct. You're absolutely right. The Kedushin is Chal.
Right.
But he's required to divorce her.
Correct.
Right.
So.
Because he can't live with her.
Right.
It's a violation of Torah. Okay.
In Akinash, the last Islam is the brother Kohen had.
Right. But that's why I say it's words. It may be logical, but it's theoretical. I mean, Abai is arguing theory.
That's exactly right. That's the way we elucidate principles.
Right. Okay. All right. Why don't we take a look at the Rashi right now? Okay. It says, Kal v'chomer, he says, all the more, that the imne seres v'stira, that if she has now become prohibited to the husband by virtue of the fact that he warned her not to seclude herself, and she went and she secluded herself, right? V'stira zu. Ben mutalo bevalo, in the case of one who had been permitted to her, namely her husband, Shahoya Mutalo, finished Kalkalo Akshav Anisuin, and now the marriage has gone kaput, right? Lay Oser Olav, because she is now prohibited to live with him, as we said before. Once she secluded herself, then in that case he can no longer live with her husband and wife. So, the Oser Olav, the Hainu Yavoma, the case of her brother in law, Shehu Oser Olav, the Chaye Malo, who is prohibited to her during the lifetime of her husband, like all she came, all the more reason, Shenesru Nisui Harisha, that the marriage of the first one are prohibited,
That Nisui Harisha is the Lovosian Shenesru. Nisui Harisha Shlovos Yavim Mikoach Osan and Nisuin.
Right.
That Nisui Harisha should never be used to validate a new liaison. It's an excellent way to frame the Kal v'chomer.
Mm-hmm.
That, because you would use that Nisuin
right.
to permit Yibum. That's the only way
right.
she. Yeah. So that Nisuin that you are looking to use to permit her, it doesn't permit her to the Mutala, and now you're going to use that to permit her to somebody who would otherwise be Aser to her?
Right. Right.
It's just a fabulous way to frame it, isn't
right.
it?
Very good. Ayashakoya.
No, but that's what makes
right.
it. And that's what allows you to frame
the next question.
The next
Kal v'chomer. Right, okay. So it says Shekidesh as Valmona, right? He betrothed her, he married her. She has to her love, who is prohibited to him, because as we know, the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry with him. It's only allowed to marry the Sula. A virgin. So Lotus Yabim Bekir Kal v'chomer Zeh. On the basis of this Kal v'chomer, she should not fall then to the Yavam. Yimnes Rav, she was prohibited to begin with because she couldn't live with the Kohen Gadol and so on. Well, the common Meforesh, and afterwards they're going to say, my Nesra, my Mutala. A little bit later, we'll try to give it more of a definition what we mean by Nesra, that she is prohibited, and what we mean mutala, that he is permitted to her. Halo asur hayomitkul. So after all, why do they use the word mutar when in the final analysis the Kohen Gadol was what? He was prohibited from marrying her in the first place. So Ella, that's the case, let's try different Kal v'chomers, says Abaye. Okay. So now they say, Nesara, she is prohibited, yes, Vasirik Ayuma. In other words, there is a standing prohibition against a widow marrying a Kohen Gadol. So all the more reason then that she should be also prohibited from marrying the Kohen Gadol's brother. Okay. Mutala? Why do you use the expression mutarla, that he is permitted to her? Asala, when in the final analysis we want to say that the husband is prohibited to her from the moment, as we said before, that, you know, she started in with monkeying around over there, with Stira over there. In other words, concealing her, you know, going into seclusion and so on. Okay? Also, Ella Ashes Kohen Shenetz. So, therefore, it goes into a different application altogether. Says, let's take the case of the wife of a Kohen who was violated. She was raped by somebody. Bumes. And then her husband, the Kohen, died. Okay? V'yesh le'och cholo. And he has a brother who is disqualified from practicing the kohuna. Okay? For what reason? Obviously because he himself was the offspring of an illegitimate liaison, according, you know, to what I'm
trying to
understand.
Ben Grusha.
Right, exactly. Could be a Ben Grusha, Ben Zaino, whatever it may be. Okay.
Or a Ben
might be even.
Pardon me? Ben Alman to Ben
Zaino. Yes, correct. That would also be a halal, absolutely. And then the fourth possibility is that he married a Yotz.
Right.
And, you know, because as we learned in the Kedushin, you know, that the Gioris by in the Chachomim decided that that falls in the same category as the Seder, believe it or not, okay? Because of what she could have been beforehand and so on. Oh. So, Lotus Yabeim, so she should not fall to this brother who is the Cholo, if he is now the brother-in-law, excuse me, right? So, im ne'eswa b'mut alo, b'osa lo, lo kol shekein. So, this would seem to be another application of the same idea, that inasmuch as to begin with, it wasn't right, because what is the din, first of all, about a ashes kohen who is violated? In that particular case, technically he cannot live with her anymore, and certainly she would not be able to have truma or anything like that, okay? This is in order to preserve the purity of the kahuna, okay? So, they say the reason why we don't bring it in over here is for a different reason. It says, Ernes, the Yisrael Mishra Shari. In the case of somebody who is not a Kohen, if the wife was violated, then he still continues to live with her. There is no such prohibition. So, if that's the case, the Gavi Dahai, Lekar Asura. And then in this particular case, there would not be any isur, any prohibition against her marrying a man other than a Kohen. That would be the prohibition, but not to marry any other kind. She's permitted to. Because of the fact that in the case of you know, a non-Kohen, then in that case, Highness is not does not render her you know, prohibited to us. All right, let's take a look again at the Rosh. Okay. Okay. Ashes Kohen Shenetz. All right. Ella. Achipara. This is the title. This is the explanation it gets. Says Ashes Kohen Shenetz. The wife of a Kohen who was violated, who was raped, and Esra love. And she therefore becomes prohibited to the husband. The Ashes Kohen Asura Afilu Ba'anis, because the wife of a Kohen is prohibited to her husband even in the case of Anis. I mean, after all, they're not talking, you know, that she wanted, that she enjoyed, you know, she wanted to have a liaison with another man. We're talking about the fact that actually she was raped. Right. So, but nevertheless, as we said, there has to be a different, you know, a higher standard for the Kohen, so that therefore, if she was raped, then in that case, she is Nesarola. She is prohibited to the to the Kohen or something. Of all Ashes Yisroel, but the wife of an ordinary Israelite, Muteras, she is permitted. Dichsiv, as it says, the Eloi is possible, In other words, literally, she wasn't caught. But what do you mean? No, it's possible. It means that she wasn't violated. Okay? On this posse, but of course, I mean, the application of it, this posse is, if you remember again, with the idea of the soda. In other words, she was not raped. She was voluntarily entering into a liaison with the man against whom the husband subsequently warned her, you know, not to have anything to do, right? That's what you're on this posse. But on this person, but let's say that she was raped by somebody, then in that case, muteris, and she would be permitted to the husband. Umidichsiv, and since it's written, the he and she, so he says, mi utavu. This is in order to give us an exclusion to this rule that we just put down. Umashbach, and we learn, the ye shacheris, that there is another woman, shafil in this posa asura, that even if she is violated, right, then she is still prohibited. Namely, in what case does it happen? It happens if she is married to a Kohen. Okay. Then we said, well, maybe Yeshlo Achiv, he has a brother, Meobib, in other words, from his father, but the Hu Cholol. And he is a Cholol. Why? Shenola Meobib in Agrusha, because he was married. His father, he was born to a Kohen who had married a divorcee, Benizchalel min Hakuna. As a result, he became literally profane. In other words, he could no longer function, you know, as a full-fledged Kohen. Okay? Umutar, and he is permitted to marry Benoshim Hapsulas Lekuhuna. He is permitted to marry women who cannot be married to a Kohen. In other words, he would be permitted, for example, to marry a Gerusha. Okay? He would be permitted to marry a Chalutza. Chalutza also cannot be permitted to marry her. Kedichsir b'kohanim, as we learn concerning Kohanim, Hanosim b'sulois, who marry women who cannot be married, I mean that they are they are unfit for being married to a Kohen. So it's written over there, Velo Yechalil Zara, that he should not, in other words, a Kohen should not cause his children to become Chalolim, in other words, to become like no longer functioning as Kohanim, no longer acting entitled to the status of being a Kohen. So Alma, we see that Zaro Cholol, that his child is a Cholol, but as we said before, if that's the case, then in that case, in other words, if he himself is a Cholol, then in that case he no longer is under the obligation to marry only those who a Kohen can marry. He can now marry those whom the Torah prohibits to a Kohen, since he no longer has the status of a full-fledged king. So, says Lotus Yavim, I want to say that the woman was forced. So, Mekal Bechom is that. Im Nesru Bebe'ilo Zu Levalo Shoye Muto Lo Yevomo It's really like almost a repeat of what we've been saying before, that as a basis of this Kal V'Chomer, namely that if Nesra, the Mutala, so certainly Kol Shekein, the Osalo. So he says, as far as this Kal V'Chomer is concerned, if she is prohibited with the Ilozu Levalo, by virtue of the fact that she had relations with her husband who was permitted to her to begin with, so be a Voma. As far as her brother-in-law, her also-law, the Isa Shoah, who at this particular moment was prohibited to her because her husband was alive and certainly culture came, all the more reason she this will love the sweet. Okay. That he's not allowed to marry the brother, because the Yavam does not have the authority to contract marriage under those circumstances. So why did we schlep it in? So the answer is because we wanted to make a point about the woman who had been violated was not married to a Kohen. Lekol Yisur, as far as the case of Yisrael. The Etzlo, who had the Gomor. And as far as he's concerned, it's completely permissible. The Yain's a Kal B'chemer, and therefore it's not a Kal B'chemer. Abol, Zinso B'Yitzon Habal, Zinso B'Ratzon, however, where the woman actually has committed adultery willingly, in other words, she wasn't, you know, violated, but she willingly entered into a liaison with another man.
She wasn't forced.
Then in that case, both the husband and his brother are equal in this prohibition. If you know she was still married to the husband, so kal v'chomer sharei machmas nisuin orishonim in his kekes the yibum the yimal abal is kal kalo kal v'chomer the yibum, which would mean Aleph, second side of the tape. Okay, so Rashi, yes, we'll finish this Rashi over here, and then we'll go to the new Mishnah. It says, Im ha'yiso tachtov, right, if she was married, you know, so, Heve kal v'chomish ha'rei b'achmas nesuin ha'rishonim in his kekes leivim. We would say that, Rashi is making the following point. If we say that, you know, to in the case of a woman who is violated but she's married to Yisrael, then in that case there is a big difference between the fact as to whether she has committed adultery, in which case she not only becomes prohibited to her husband, but also she would be prohibited to his brother as well. Okay? But on the contrary, if the woman had not entered into a liaison willingly, but she was violated, so in that case not only did we say then that she is still muteris levalo, that she is permitted to live with her husband, but even if he should pass away without having any children, then certainly the law of Yibam could apply to her. So that Rashi here is making a distinction between a woman violated and a woman who, purposely committed adultery. But again, we're talking about the Israel because of the fact that we're not talking about the Kohen. In the case of the Kohen, as we already said, that if she had been violated, the Kohen still cannot live with her anymore because this would be a violation of the purity of the Kohen. All right, so now we go on to a new Mishnah.
And Rashi is saying all of these Kashas and Rava, we needed to add one point to make this Kal v'chomer cogent. The action that would ruin her for the husband would have to be equally ruinous were the Yavam, she married to the Yavam.
Right.
That will of necessity eliminate acts which really aren't immoral, flagrantly immoral, from being valid in the Kal v'chomer, which is really what you needed to make it logical in the first place. And that struck crazy hypothesis to get it, but they really needed to modify it in this fashion.
I certainly appreciate.
That's what Rashi was really deriving at.
Oh, there's the Indian over here.
Complicated.
Okay. So now we have the Mishnah now continues. It says,
the Elu Asuras will have hold the Tumah. Okay? The following women, if married to a Kohen, would be prohibited from eating Tumah. And we have now over here in the Mishnah a list of different people. Ba'omeris Tamea Ani, the prophet. If a woman says, for example, I am unclean unto you. Now, unclean, we don't mean the fact that she's a leader. What we mean over here is the fact that she says, you know, I had an affair. Okay? Then in that case, from that particular point on, she cannot eat any tumor anymore. That cuts her off. Or, Mishebo Eidim Shehitimeo. Or, witnesses came to say that they saw, you know, that she had been guilty of, having an affair. Okay? So, that cuts her off. Or, the Ho'omeris. Or, if a woman says, Eini Shesa. Husband says to her, of course, the husband is a Kohen in this case, right? And he says to her, I want you to drink divine Mabari. You did, I warned you, and still you secluded yourself after I warned you with the presence of witnesses and so on. So, I want you to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. Okay? And what if she says, but I don't want to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim? Then in that particular case, what is the rule? So the rule would be, that in that case, that's the end of it. She doesn't go to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim, but she can't live with him anymore. She can't live with him. She can't live with him anymore. That cuts her off immediately from eating truma. Or, the Shebalei no Ritzel HaShpesa. And what happens if, let's say, the husband says to her, look, I don't want you to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. So in that case, according to the Mishnah, she should also lose the opportunity to eat truma, even though, she has been warned by the husband, and it's confirmed that the Nistara, that she secluded herself, but he says, I don't want you to go through with the ordeal. But, as we already learned, he can't live with her. Once he has said, we have this evidence about the Nistara, he can't live with her, and so therefore she can't have Tumah, regardless of whether he wants her to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim or not. And finally, what happens if the husband would have intercourse with her while they're on their way to Yerushalayim? In other words, he's warmed her and everything else and so on, and they're ready to go to Yerushalayim, and then, they stop off in the hotel on the way, and they sleep together. So in that case, what is the ruling over there? So according to this, she cannot eat truma. Well, let's take a look at what Rashi has to say.
You said she's forced, if she can't with her husband, she's forced to.
No. We said in the case of a Kohen, if she is raped by somebody else, understand? Then in that particular case, automatically, he can't keep her anymore as his wife. This is in right, because... That's different than in the case of Israel, right. Because of the fact that...
The sanctity of the Kohen,
exactly. That's what it is. Right. Okay. Lechol b'truma.
Just she couldn't eat truma.
Right. Of course, Rashi says in Bukh Kohen, obviously, because only if the husband is a Kohen can she eat truma, okay? Of course, there is another possibility for eating truma.
It says Rashi's a real sud.
Right.
You see this, the Agos, it doesn't go into it. Agos ever,
right.
Today is, you don't want to carry it too far trying to figure out what every word of Rashi is.
Right.
He's intending to instruct,
but
it does appear superfluous. He doesn't offer it. He just cryptically says, "A tavin sod Rashi the dog hate it." So you gotta go to the you gotta.
Right.
He says it's in Tosfos
right.
Yom Tov.
Yeah. Okay. But obviously, the main reason is, there is a possibility. Well, she is a bas kohen.
Bas kohen.
Right.
Yeah.
Daughter of a kohen.
Right.
And then it's written in the Torah, bas kohen, it's in the Zohar, right?
Mm-hmm.
He betuna sakot hashem lo sakal, but then it says vaskein kishtiyeh almona ugrusha v'zera ein lo. Then the show basically to the rebbe. So melechem avi otochel. In other words, then she's permitted again to begin eating truma. That's if she became either widowed or divorced, and went back to live with her father.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And obviously, that is not obviously.
Yeah, this but this is not relevant over here, right? It's not relevant.
The Rashi's in it.
Right. So, Fisher, Ba'alor, Bo'leh, Ba'der. So, it says, the Shur, Ein Amayim, Bodkin, also. It says, so, if the husband sleeps with her on the way to Yishalayim, then the water is not going to be effective in, you know, in examining her to find out whether she really was pure or not pure, right? To the common, as we'll learn a little bit later on in the Gemara. It's written over there, you know, the Pasuk says, V'niko ha'ish be'avon, right? That the husband shall be literally held guiltless from sin, in other words, because of the dream of Mayim Hamahorim, and it proved that she was really an innocent, you know, she was innocent, you understand? And not guilty of the charges that the husband made. So nevertheless, it says that the husband too will be discharged from sin, right? You understand? In other words, he'll also be absolved from blame. But this is not how they you know, the drash that they give later on.
She passes the test.
Yeah, she passes the test, but still we don't want to penalize the husband either. You understand? So that's what it means in the Torah when it says, V'nikah ish v'yoma. But it says, V'zman sheha ish minuka. In other words, when the husband himself is guiltless in his own conduct, you understand? This is what the drash is. In other words, the Mayim Hamorim, when are they going to work? If the husband himself has not indulged, you know, in the adultery, you understand? Or Shalom Bo'aleho. In other words, he didn't the Mayim Hamorim will work if he did not have intercourse with her, Miyachash and Esroma, right? After she had become prohibited to him, as we said before, that she becomes prohibited by virtue of the fact, you know, that he has witnesses, you know, to say that she secluded herself. So, and that, and then he allows and he has relations with her. Then in that case, Oz Ha'isha Ha'i, Yisroes Ha'beda. In other words, then, you know, if the husband behaved with propriety, if he didn't do something wrong, right, then the woman, you see, can bear her sin. But, Eino ish bin ruka miyomun, but let's say that the husband is not guiltless of sin, in that particular case, Eino mayim bodkim es ishto. And we say that the water cannot effectively test his wife.
His sanctity masks it.
What?
His sanctity would mask it because the people have it.
You know, it has nothing to do with his sanctity. On the contrary, what we're saying is that if he had behaved himself the minute that she was prohibited to him, right?
Yeah.
So in that case,
it'll show up.
Then right, and the mayim, you know, the water will test her properly.
But
so
if he doesn't, it won't show up.
But exactly, that's
yeah,
what
that,
it says.
In other words, his sanctity is hiding it. The fact that he will have it, or he's hiding the results of the test.
Well, I don't know what you mean by sanctity, but the fact is that his misbehavior causes, you know, by more not to work.
I thought it was his high level. His high level was
causing. No, on the contrary. What we're saying is
that's because maybe he didn't think she was guilty, even though he'd be to have a
point. That's not the point. The point is that, you know, we have different points. Okay, so we've already established he wants her, right? And he says, don't talk to so-and-so, and there are witnesses, you know, that they didn't like her behavior with this man. And then the next stage, he said, is steer that he wants him, don't you dare have any rendezvous with this particular person, right? And the witness comes along to say that, you know, that she did have a rendezvous, and so on. So what happens at that point? At that point, she now is prohibited to her husband. And what is the next stage? The next stage is that he has to go with her to Yerushalayim, and there the water will test her effectively as to whether she is innocent or whether she is guilty of his suspicions. You understand?
If he didn't do his part, he'd sin with her.
If he sins with her, then what's the purpose of the Bible? They're not going to work. Okay. He too has to be spotless in his behavior if he wants her to be proven spotless in her behavior. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now the Gemara says, let's see, we won't be there. Okay, we'll live a little bit longer yet before my voice runs out. Okay, Omer Rav Amram. So Rav Amram says, Hovilsa Omalon Rav Sheshes. Says, you know, Rav Sheshes told us a good word, he says, the Yadholon Ayin in the Mastisa. And he literally, he lit up our eyes from the Mishnah. In other words, he made us understand, he enabled us to understand the Mishnah more clearly. Okay? Okay. What about this Mishnah that we're talking about? The one about, you know, these women are prohibited from eating truma? So, he says, okay, case number one. He says, Soto sheyesh lo edim b'medinas hayom. Let's say this woman is a Sota. In other words, she's suspected of being an adulterous woman, right? But where are the witnesses to testify that, you know, she actually had illicit relations? They're all the way in some far off land. Okay? Dinasiyon means in a faraway place. Okay? So Enamayim Bodkinasa. Then in that case the water is not going to have any effect in testing her. Even if the Hasan schleps her for Yerushalayim, but nevertheless the water will not test her adequately. My Tama. What reason? The Ramakra, because the Pasuk says, the Nistara, the Hinit Moa, the Eidin Ba. The Nistara. She has concealed herself, yeah. The Hinit Moa, and she was guilty of an illicit affair, but nevertheless, the Eidin Ba. There is no witness against her. We'll come back to this in a second. And what does it mean? The Eidin Ba means the lack of the Yadin Ba. Okay? There is nobody around who knows anything about the affair that she had, because as we said, the witnesses are someplace far where they're not available. So La Fuke, this is to exclude her. In this case, the Ho Iko de Yodaba. Case where there is somebody who can testify, and we know, and we have, you know, evidence of the fact, you know, that she was guilty.
Even
of,
if they're inaccessible, right? As long as they exist.
Right. All right. Take a look at the Rashi so far. The Anhalon Ayanin, he says, Hevi Lonu Island Berg Mastis. He brought proof of what he had to say from our Mishnah over here. It says, Saita Shiishla Edim in the Asayam, Shero Shanitma Mizeh. They saw, you know, that she had committed adultery with so and so, but the Edim bought, and there is no witness. Concerning this. In other words, you don't have a witness at hand to prove it, okay? So, Rashi brings a very important point. He says, Afal Gav, the Darshin and Le'el, Le'ed Echad Ne'eman B'Saito, right? Even though, before, how did we use this pasuk, Le'ed Ein Bo? We said, if you remember, that normally Eders consist of how much? At least two witnesses, right?
Right.
But in the case of the Sota, they made an exception to say that Eidin Bo, that in the case of Nistara, you know, once they see her go into seclusion with, her lover, then in that particular case, we said one witness would be sufficient in order to establish this. Matter of fact, we said even if the husband himself saw it, I mean, he could, you know, bring a charge against her. And so, on what basis did they say that only one witness was sufficient? Because they said the aid ain't bar. Here the Torah makes an exception, and it says that aid can be interpreted as a single witness is permitted to testify against. But this is not normally the way we interpret it. So now we are interpreting the aid ain't bar literally, simply to state that there is no witness of the fact that she had committed adultery. Okay? Well, the Sota Vadois, right? And in the case where she's definitely a Sota, Shaloi Tishte Od, okay? We're talking about over here that the Eidin Bo, we are sure that she is a Soto Vadois. What do we mean by Soto Vadois? We are sure that actually she really did commit adultery. She really did that. But nevertheless, shelo tishta, right? She cannot go through with the mayim hamalorim. Why? Because there is no witness against her. Okay, so then Rashi says, ein mikra yotzei midei peshuta. Says, in the final analysis, even though, you know, we have all kinds of drushes from Sukkim, but nevertheless, we cannot depart also from the pshat of a pasuk. Ein mikra yotzei peshuta. Because this, you know, something that Rashi has his commentary to the Torah again and again, you know. That even though he brings in, let's say, a medrash or something like that, but then the final analysis says, but nevertheless, I tell you that what is the pshat? Because you cannot really divorce a text in the Torah from the pshat, from the simple, plain meaning of it. Okay? So if it says the aid ain't good, the pshat actually is that there is no witness against her. So even though she's a sota, and she's definitely a sota, but nevertheless, she cannot drink the Bimarorim because there is no witness.
But there is a witness.
No. First we talk about aid ain't good in the sense that there is a witness. Now, we're saying, you understand, to accept the idea that aid echod is nirman in this particular case. So I said another occasion, we have a general principle of ein echod ne'emun b'yisura, that when it comes, you know, to those things that are also mutar, then in that case even one witness will be sufficient. But what Rashi is saying over here is that, forget about what we said about that, it's still a valid argument, but it's a drash. What we have to do over here is to apply the pshat. What is the pshat? The pshat is that even if she is a sota, but if it's the aid ain't bor, there is no witness present who can testify to the fact, you know, that she committed adultery, and then in that case, she doesn't drink the Mayim HaMorim. If there is no witness.
There has to be a witness for her to drink?
Yes. For her to drink.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
We said that. Take a look at the very first mission.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? Very first mission.
Has to be 88. Okay.
Right. Has to be 8 echon. This is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, if you remember correctly. As opposed to Rabbi Yezu. Rabbi Yezu said that you had two.
Okay.
But, you know,
so
Rabbi Akiva says
words
it's enough with one. Right. Okay?
Trying to fit the words of Rashi.
Excuse me, Rabbi Yezu. Yeah.
This is the only case with witnesses where you only
need one. This is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, the very first thing.
You only need
echad.
This is the only place where you need echad.
Right, right. Yeah, well, as I said.
Okay.
So that this is the point that he's making right now. That, you know, nevertheless, with aid in law, literally, there is no witness here. Because where are the witnesses? They're in Me'eva Layom, you know, Medina Sayom, some place, you know, in some far place, far away place where they're not coming in order to testify, then in that particular case, you cannot, you know, force her to go and to drink the Mayim HaMorim, okay? With our Shinan Lay Nami says Hochim, and therefore we give the Drash also like this, the Eid Ein Bo, right? Hu de Omar, the Hevi Ha'ish Es Ishtoi. Right, it's written that, you know, the husband has to bring his wife to Yerushalayim. So the Kol HaParsha says, "Bo yesh bo eid." Right, there is a witness. Then ein amayim boikin oisal. In other words, that if there is a witness, then in that particular bo yesh bo eid. In a mind, but myself. But as we said before, I mean, actually, the point that they're trying to make at this, you know, here is that if we say that there is no witness to testify against her, then in that case, how can he take her to, you know,
there's a
Aid
Stira,
right?
And then there's Aid Tuma.
Correct.
So Aid Ain Boy, isn't that referring to Aid?
Yeah.
Aid for the actual
right.
act of
the but the
adultery?
Question is, what is stira and what is tuma? Remember, that we discussed.
Right.
Okay, and we said that stira and tuma are really the same thing in that, what do we mean by that? That if she was secluded long enough for tuma to have occurred, that's the way we had interpreted you know, several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then in that particular case, you know, then she is a seitan and he brings it, etc., etc., okay?
Right.
Because,
but if you have aid in the actual,
yeah,
you have
if they are present.
If you have eight who are actually present for the act
right.
of adultery.
Even if it's only one witness.
Even
then
if it's only one,
case,
then she doesn't drink.
No. Even if there is only one, she can be forced to drink.
Okay.
I mean, the husband can take her, I mean, because she wants to. Why is she going? Remember, we said according to the Mishnah. She has a right to say, I refuse to drink.
Right.
But, the immediately that puts an end to the marriage. She wants to preserve the marriage. And so that's why she's going to Yerushalayim in order to prove her innocence,
mm-hmm.
you see. So, in that case, he can take her to Yerushalayim, however, unless there is at least one witness to the fact that Mr. Robin it was, okay?
Did you finish
that,
Rashi? What does it mean?
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled by Rashi over here, too, I'll be honest.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to figure out that it means that if there's an actual aid,
yeah.
that more than just steer took place,
yeah.
then she's no longer allowed to drink. And that's what Rashi means by Sota Vados.
Yeah.
I did miss some of the Gemara, so I hesitate.
Yeah.
Because I did miss some of the discussion of Stira and Tuma.
Yeah.
My understanding was that if an actual act of penetration is observed, then she is no longer permitted. That's not the issue of a Sota.
Yeah.
So is this what Rashi is referring to? And is this the Eid Ein Bar that we're talking about?
Yeah. But still, I don't understand. There's a certain inconsistency over here. I mean, the point that they're trying to make is, that if they're Eidim and Meninas Hayom, they're not there, in other words. Then in that particular case, Ein HaMayim Bodkin Laso. The water is not going to prove anything. Not going to prove whether she's innocent or not. He can still take her to Yerushalayim, but the point is, that we would say that the water would not really be a proof of anything. This is what the conclusion would be.
Shiro shenit mami say. You're saying that's the same as stira.
Yeah.
When Rashi says sote sheyeshla edim minas hayam.
Yeah.
Shiro shenit mami say. That's no more than edim stira.
Yeah, correct. It's the same thing. Because we've equated stira with tuma. Okay. Even though the two different words, because it's written "ministeral" in it more,
mm-hmm.
so we interpret that "ministeral" means that she's she was secluded long enough, the in it more for her, a period of time for her to become the male. Okay.
So there is no aidus beyond that. Would serve any purpose?
No.
If Aiden Cannon says that we actually saw an act of penetration take place, that would not
right.
add anything to the issue?
Yeah, well, what it would do, of course, it would be, then we said, if there are eight of them who come and they say, we saw it actually happen,
right.
then in that case, he doesn't go anymore to Yerushalayim.
Right, and that's
right.
not Eidei Tumah, that's, what do we refer, how do we refer to those eight of them? What's the...
I would say it would be
Eidei
Stira or Eidei Tumah, I would say so. Yeah. Yeah, because at
that
point the process stops. I mean, because they have definite evidence, and that's
for one.
Right.
And for one, that's the whole point of Sota, when there's one aid that actually saw
right.
an adulterous act performed.
Right. Right.
Well,
you claim
there's two aid, you don't go to the shrine to say that this is
no. The question is,
he's differentiating between seclusion and penetration a lot of time, right?
Yeah, we understand.
Well, that's
but that's okay, but it's virtually the same idea because
yeah.
we said before that, but this the role she came in and showed me, she stepped in the door and stepped right out again, then in that particular case, then that doesn't apply, okay?
Obviously.
Right. But, if she was there long enough, for something, for action to have taken place, you see. Then that's it.
You need two, two witnesses.
Well, there's no.
You only need one.
You need two witnesses.
There's
a difference of opinion, as we saw. So there's a difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. According to Rabbi Eliezer, for the stira, one witness is enough. The one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In other words, to testify that, she was in the seclusion. Because that's how they interpreted the Ada and Bo. That this is one of those rare cases, that only one witness, is necessary, okay? Right. Now, here we're dealing with a case where, there are witnesses.
And accident.
But the witnesses are not there. They're not, they're in a far off place, you see. And so they're not coming to testify against them. So the question is, will the water be effective in testing her or not? It's not in Hamayim Botkin. This is what I would say. In Hamayim Botkin, so it doesn't mean in this particular case that they simply don't take her to Yerushalayim, but that it would be ineffective as a proof of anything. Okay?
Does it mean perhaps when he says Hayesh Bo Eid, he's using it loosely to mean Eid Din?
Yes.
Is that the way we're going to understand, right?
But as I said, I mean, the theory, even one aid is enough, you see.
But Ein Hamayim, when Rashi says, Hayesh Bo Eid Ein Hamayim
Botkin Asa, right.
Meaning that she can't drink, she no longer has the option of taking
it. Well, I don't know if really that's what it means. I think now my new interpretation would be a little different. Namely, that even though, you know, she goes and she drinks the Mayim HaMoharim, but if there is an actual witness present, then in that particular case, it may not have any effect. It may not prove anything.
Actual witness to what?
To the fact, you know, that she was in seclusion with the person for a time long enough, you know, for an affair to have taken place.
I mean, there was no witness to that. There was no witness to this, to your... You're saying if the witness is far away,
he's far away. He's not present. Okay.
And he didn't have the opportunity to tell the husband this.
Right. Maybe you saw, I don't know, maybe it happened in Buffalo, and she lives in San Francisco or something like that. You understand? So he stays in Buffalo. He doesn't go to San Francisco in order to testify. Okay. He's far away. The witness, and he doesn't take the trouble to come in, okay? But the husband has his suspicions, and he wants to test her, okay? To me, it's a scenario which it doesn't quite gel, I'll be honest with you. It doesn't quite gel. I thought I understood the pshat, but now I'm beginning to wonder whether I do understand the pshat of what Rashi was driving at. Because if we go simply with the text itself, the Gemara,
which is where we're in.
Right. Again, let's take a look at it. What does it say? It says, okay? He says, Soito Shiyeshla Eidem Bimdinas Hayon, right? So, Eina Mayim Bodkinasa. And in that particular case, we come to the conclusion that the water itself will not really prove to be an adequate test for her. My Tama, what is the reason? The Omar Krah, because the Pasuk says, Venistara, right? The Enid Ma. And then it says, Ve'ed Ein Ba. There is no witness present, the Lekha, the Yodabon, right? Who can testify that, you know, he saw it actually happen. La Fuke, in order to exclude Ha, in this particular case, the Ha Iker the Yodabon, right? Where there is somebody who has seen her, right? And,
even though they're not here.
Yeah, right. Maybe the lack of the Yodaba has to be understood a little bit differently than the way I interpreted before. Maybe the lack of the Yodaba means that there simply is no witness whatever.
Anywhere. Exactly.
Right, yeah. La Fuke, in order to exclude Ha, in this particular case, namely, even though that they are all the way in Medina Sayyam, but nevertheless, the Ha'ik of the Yodaba, nevertheless, they know, they have knowledge of the fact that she did. So, at any rate, if they are in the Medina Sayyam, what we're saying is that Ein Hamayim Botkin Asa, the water will not be an effective test as to her chastity. All right, do a couple of more lines and we'll call it a night. The Anhalon Ayanin, the Masnis, and another thing that we understood a little better from the Mishnah. The Katani, where we learn Shebo lo Eidim Shei Tameah, right? Witnesses came to say that she is Tameah. We said before that what happens at that point, she loses the ability to eat Truma. She's prohibited to her husband, so she can't eat Truma. So, the Gemara wants to know the also Eidim Eimas, when did these witnesses come? Eneimah, if we say, Bekami the Tishte, you know, before actually she would go in to drink the Mayim Haba Orim, then in that case, Zoinahi. Then we say that she is a Zoina, she is an immoral woman, she's a loose woman. And as a Zoina, we learned that a Kohen is not allowed to live with a Zoina, he can't marry a Zoina, right? So therefore, immediately, what would he have to do? Divorce her and she loses the Truma. Okay. So, Elo the Bosor, the Shasai. But if we say that the witnesses came after she had drunk the Mayim Hamorim, so, E Amit Bishlamor, if you say, Eina Mayim Botkin, I saw that whether she drinks or she doesn't drink, it's not going to make any difference to prove her guilt or her innocence, then Shapir. Okay. Elo Yamit Mayim Botkin, so. But if we say that the water really has tested her as to whether she's innocent or not, and now all of a sudden here come witnesses who say that, hey, this woman who drank my water, we have definite evidence, you know, that she committed adultery, right? So to go to Nilsen and Mafreya, the Sade Shakrin Inhu. Then, if we accept the verdict that the water proves that she is innocent, then it would mean that we have to say that these witnesses who have come are Ede Sheker.
Which would mean we should never permit them to testify.
Right.
They can also.
Exactly. They can't because they're liars, right? So Amalei Rav Yosef said to him, Le'olam Eim Lechol Mayim Boitken, I say to you that the water really is a test of her. So if that's the case, what happens then if witnesses come afterwards and so on? I don't say that they're liars. Maybe they're telling the truth. But I have to give a different explanation. He says, Zuchus Tolom. I would say that the reason why she didn't immediately swell up, right, and her thigh falls and so on and so forth, in other words, the curse occurred. Why didn't it happen? Because she is a woman who has all the virtues. And whatever merit that she has, it protected her at least temporarily from the effects of the Mayim Hamor.
An oxymoronic kind of
nevertheless,
Mayim Bokinosa,
right?
The ratio, and then the safe is
that they are well because they're two different opinions.
That's what I'm sorry.
Yeah, take a look.
Okay.
See, Rav Yosei.
Right.
The Rabbanon hold that not. Ain Bodkin. That has no
effect.
Yeah,
but Rizal, Ain Bodkin, so. That's a contradiction in itself.
Right.
If a Zechus can be Tola, then you can't say, that's not truly a Bodkin, is it?
Right.
If it's capable of being negated by a Zechus, what kind of Bodkin is it?
Okay, so let's read on a couple of more lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I come in.
We'll see. Okay. So it says, but my complicated. In other words, what is this difference of opinion between Rav Yosef and the Chacham? Bimnis Navna the Rebbe.
This is the case where the Rebbe has the opinion that, let's say, after the woman has, drunk the Mayim Hamaorim, she doesn't immediately have the effects of, her belly swelling and the thigh falling, but instead she has a period where she doesn't feel good. Her health becomes poor. Okay, but it's not literally, if not in Hebrew means
to deteriorate.
Her health becomes deteriorated. Right. Okay. The Tanan, as we learned, is a Mishnah that says, Rabbi Yomer, Zechus Toilo B'mayim Hamorim. Right? It says that previous merit that she may have can suspend temporarily the effects of Mayim Hamorim, the Yenu Yoledis, so that she doesn't give birth. Remember, in the Torah it says that part of the proof, that she is innocent is the fact that, when her husband resumes living with her, then she'll have a child, okay? That's a proof of her innocence, okay? So he says, Eino your letters, she will not have a child. The Eino Mishabachas, or Mashbachas, but she also doesn't get any better as a result of the drinking the Maimarim, Elam Misnavedis. misnavdal leiliches, right? And she simply help becomes more and more notorious, and the sof shehid meisav eisa misav, and the end will be that finally she will die from the death that was predicted, but after a time has passed. Okay, so this is Rabbi's opinion. Okay, so Rab Sheshes of our, he is of the opinion that vein the Rabbi, vein the Rabbanon, he misnabda, that whether you accept Rabbi's opinion, namely, you know, that she's going to get sick, or the Rabbanon would say she's not, but he thinks that she's going to get ill in any case. But Rab Yosef Sobar, Rab Yosef is of the opinion that the Rabbi have you misnabda, that in accordance with Rabbi's opinion, yes, she is going to get sick as a result, because, I mean, she will eventually, but, you know, it's just that she won't immediately show the effects of it, but the Rabbonim lo havi misnadnu. But as far as the rabbis are concerned, she is not going to show any effects of you know, her health deteriorating. So we'll
excuse
stop
me
at this point, and
yeah,
we'll have to go over this point again next week if you're so much.
I have a problem. Yeah.
Pardon me?
Mechaches is the translation Rashi.
Yeah, in other words, you know, that she's sort of like hesitating or something.
Can I give the place to the...
oh, yeah.
Paper? We're in a Mechachta Sota, we're on Daf, Vav, Amid Aleph, the bottom of the smaller lines.
Okay. It's too bad that Earth didn't show up with another tape, but I guess he couldn't make it tonight.
Wow. That's the first time.
It's going to
be a lapse in the tapes.
Yeah, all right. It's all done. Okay, so Masa Rav Shesha, Rav Shimi Barashi, he comes along and he disagrees with the discussion that we've had. Why? Because he says, Rav Shimon Oimer, Rav Shimon is with the opinion that Ein Zchus Toil B'mayim Amorim. He says that merit is not going to have any effect whatever on the Mayim Amorim. In other words, what they, if they drink, it's going to prove either innocence or guilt, and forget about the idea that there's a postponement of, you know, the suffering. In other words, that she's guilty, but that the effects are not immediately recognized. The Yimato Omer, Zechus Toilo B'mayim Amorim, and he continues with the argument, and he says, if you say that merit does play a part in postponing the effects of the Mayim HaMorim, then in that particular case, you know what? He says, Matcha Toes HaMayim Bifnei Kol HaNoshim HaShoses. Then what you're saying is that no matter any woman who comes to be tested by the Mayim HaMorim, we never know what the result is going to be. So what's the whole purpose of the whole deal, in other words, in bringing if the Mayim HaMorim has absolutely no effect? Very logical position on the part of Reb Shimon. And not only that, but the Ata Motzi Shemra Al HaTahoros Shesasu, right? You are causing them to bring about, you know, to give an evil reputation to the women who are absolutely innocent, who drank the Mayim HaMorim. They ain't omrim to meos hoyu, and people will be saying, because they say, you know, the Mayim HaMorim has no effect, so they'll be saying, yeah, these women, they were guilty anyway. So this is a motzi shemra. Elo shetolo lahen zechus. But rather, we have to say that they do have merit, right? The im isa. And if we have a case of yesh lo eden b'medinas hayom, if we maintain that, you know, any woman who drinks the Mayim HaMorim, we have no proof whatever against her. But you say, yeah, but there may be witnesses someplace in the Medinas Hayom, way, way, way off, who have knowledge of the fact that she had an affair. So, Name Atomotzi Shemrel Al HaTahora Sheshosu, right? Then you're also casting aspersions, you know, you're giving an evil name
to women who are absolutely innocent who drank the Maim HaMorim, they ain't no room, and people simply say, Tameos Hoyu, Elo Sheesh Lehen Edim Minas Hayom. These women were really guilty, but the only reason why we see nothing happening to them is because the witnesses are in a far off country and they're not here in order to testify against them. So, the Rab Shimon, Ka'amrit, so he says, you are quoting to me Rab Shimon. The Rab Shimon, in his Chuslitalia, Edim Name Leitol, says, according to Rab Shimon, inasmuch as he denies the fact that Zechus, that merit, will simply postpone the effects, in other words, thereby vitiating the whole idea of whether the Maim HaMa'orim is actually effective, so likewise your argument to me that there are Edim in Medina Sayyam, he says, it also doesn't hold water for Rav Shimon. Nami Leitol, no such thing. Why not? If there are witnesses, let them come forward. If there aren't witnesses, then let's not cast aspersions. This is Rav Shimon's opinion. Matziv Rav, so Rav asked the following kasha. He said that Eilu, let's see, oh, we've got a long stretch up here. You know what? Let's do the Rashi up to this point, okay? Okay. Yeah, it says Matchato, okay, the fourth line from the bottom. It says Matchato, it says Koach Hamayim Bifnei Hanoshim. It says, you are negating the value of the Mayim HaMa'orim as far as the women are concerned. Shelo Yehu Yireos Mehem, because in that case you say that the women will not be afraid of the water. Lohodos Shehi Temeyo, to confess that she had committed adultery. And if she says, I don't want to go through with the Mayim HaMa'orim because I don't want to see God's name erased by the Mayim HaMa'orim, you have to write out, the Kohen has to write out on the parchment, these passages from the Torah, including God's name over there, and I don't want it to happen, so I'll say that I committed adultery, even though I didn't commit adultery, because I'm not afraid of the Mayim HaMa'orim, and it's not going to do anything to me. So, therefore, he says,
if she confesses that she commits adultery,
yes,
doesn't she then get skila?
No.
Why is that?
Have to be witnesses to corroborate it.
Oh, the same thing is wrong.
A person ain't odom meisim atzmei rosho. This is a principle that we have in Gemara in Sanhedrin, that a person cannot testify against himself, particularly in a criminal case. In a civil case, yes, you can say, it's true that, I failed to repay my loan to so-and-so. Or so-and-so admits, that Shimon paid him back the money, but, he came to the court to go to... the rush, okay? Alright, so in the argument between Rav Yosef and Abaye makes the point, look, if you think, that it's not important for her, to... that she's not required to marry the Yavam, then in that case, he says, Chalitza Namilesa Boy, then she shouldn't require also Chalitza, if that's the case. The Ha Potarach Mono, right? Because the Torah came along and made her Potter, in other words, from having to get a get or a Chalitza or anything like that, and the fact is Sharia the Yishacher, Becholinyon. The fact is that she can marry another person, right, without any strings attached. Okay? Shateitse mibesa. Acha shanim sobo evasdova. In other words, that she should be able, to get a get from the husband after she has been found, guilt, after she has been suspected of evasdova. So, getting back to the Gemara now. coming out of the army later by himself. So Amalei, so he said to him, as Rabbi Yosef says to him, "Lo, ilu isay lebal." If the husband is still there, milo by a get, right? Wouldn't she require a get if the husband was alive? So hashtonami, if the husband now is dead, so tiboy chalitza, let her require a chalitza. In other words, as long as we have to have something official, let it be an official act. Either she gets a get if the husband is alive and he finds her Eva's daughter, right? Or if he finds some Eva's daughter in her that he's suspicious of, then let her have chalitza from the brother-in-law. All right, this is the first reasoning. Now we'll see that there are other ways that they interpret this. Okay? The Ishti Amr, he says, there are those who say that this is what the discussion was. Omar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said, Rachmono Omar, the Torah said, the Yotzam and Beiso, that, you know, she leaves his home, in other words, she's divorced by the husband, right? The whole of the house of the Yishachar, right? So, why does the Torah want this to happen? So he says, there's a reason for it. The reason is, the loyal history of the The reason being that they don't want a woman like this to destroy her household. In other words, if she acts in a way that brings shame and disrepute to the family, then in that case it's better that, you know, that the marriage break up. Okay? The Yatam wrote, but you say, Tisyamim Nami Yibumi, she should still, what? Be married to the oven, to the brother-in-law. After all, isn't that the same family, right? So in other words, here, if she was doing something that the husband was unhappy with, he warned her, and he said, don't. So you want that if he should happen to die, that the brother-in-law should marry her? It's still a reflection. It would still destroy the family, whether it's with the husband or whether it's with the husband's brother. So Abaye said, "No, Elamiyata, if that's the case, Le'acher lo tidose, then let her not marry anybody after this. Why? The lawyer tistere levese, so that she shouldn't destroy the home of the new husband." So Amalei, so he said to her, "Hey," he says, "hold it." It says, "Mi kora minin lo alei bal kachin." Can we force her to be married to him against his will? Rashi. Says, "Ilu yisei leval," right? Says, "Mi mishtariya belo get." How can, you know, if the husband is alive, how can she be free, literally, without a get? Hoksiv, it's written in the Torah, what? The chos of lo sefer karisas, right? Afilu motubo evas dova, krisas bayim. Even if he found something unseemly in her, now we're not, in other words, the point that Rashi is making is, he may have other reasons for wanting to divorce the wife, you understand? Even if her conduct was above reproach. But there may be some other reason. He didn't like her personality or whatever it is, you know. So, in any case, how can he dissolve the marriage? The only way to dissolve the marriage is what? With a sefer krisas, with a get. So, hashtanami, by a chalitza. So, if that's the case, if she requires a get, then in this case, she should require a chalitza, the yovim became baal kai, because the yovim, the brother-in-law, is now replacing the brother in this relationship, and therefore she should require chalitza. Alright, is the Amre, there's another interpretation, the Hochi Shani Rav Yosef Le'el, this is the reason why Rav Yosef said previously that, you know, why a get? It's the little illustrator basic, right? The Soita also, you know, that she destroys the house. It says, yeah. So, Siva Leval of the Gershom Ebeso, right? The Torah commanded that a husband should divorce his wife, Kishe Motzobo Evas Dova, right? Kohechei Deloy Listerei Lebeso, because if he finds that her conduct is very unseemly, very not right, right? But in that case, she's going to destroy the family, destroy the household. Kedom Ala'el, as we learned before, Daf Gimel over there, that it's Zinusa Bebeso, Kikarya de Shumshiba. We learned over there that Zinus, in other words, if there is adultery in a household, then it's like a worm inside the cabbage. Okay? In other words, it keeps on picking, and little by little it just destroys the marriage. So, as I said, you know, in that case, and then so the Yavama too. So then he says, okay, but what are we going to do? He says, Mikora Minan Avei, the mitzvah Bal Kochi, can we force her to be married against his will? The either the Yavon Aminan Lei, in the, that we say to the Yavam, it says, mitzvahs yibum kodemes, the mitzvahs mitzvah. In other words, we are trying to force, are we going to try to force this woman to be married to the brother-in-law, even if the brother-in-law doesn't want it, by applying the principle? Now, you see, they're saying that the mitzvah is a greater mitzvah, right? Says that mitzvahs yibum kodemes the mitzvahs chalitza, that the mitzvah of marrying the widow is takes priority over the mitzvah of chalitza. But this would be true when, if it weren't a case, you know, that motzei bo evas tova, that there's something wrong with the marriage. Avol b'ha, however, here in this particular case, otzur lememolei, it is prohibited to us to tell him what you must marry this woman. And that's the case. Obviously, we now learn that the Torah is telling us the also the Yavama, right? That the also the Yabon maybe that is prohibited to have her marry the brother-in-law. The lo shayach bo yibum, because it's not right for her for the yibum to take place. The havyak ishes och, and in that case, if yibum is out of the picture, then in that particular case, she would be like an ishes och, like, you know, the wife of a brother, shelo bimkom mitzvah, which, as I said, is prohibited. In other words, under normal circumstances, a woman cannot marry her husband's brother. I mean, even assuming that the brother dies, but she cannot marry. The only way, you know, would be with Yibum, and Yibum we don't practice anymore today, and Yibum is out of the question over here, as we say. So, what are you going to do? You're going to leave her a hefka? No. What you have to do is to give her chalitza so she can reconstruct her own life afterwards. Okay? All right, I think we'll stop at this point. I'm getting a little bit tired, a little bit hoarse. Tonight is February the 5th, and we are currently on Dav Vav at the very top of Amud Aleph. I'll review just for a couple of minutes the last inyan that we were talking about last week, and then we shall continue. Okay. The last item that we had was a discussion of the latter part of the first Mishnah, where it says, V'yameis Chaylatzis, if you remember. In other words, that if the husband dies prior to the time that she has the Mayim HaMahorim before she's tested, then in that particular case, she gets Chalitza from her brother-in-law, if she had no child, of course. I'm assuming also that the late husband had a brother. But she is not Miss Yabemis. She does not enter into marriage with him, Lu Yibah. Shalom Aleichem. How are you?
Okay.
Good.
Sorry.
Okay, just in time. I'm giving you a slight summary of the last thing you mentioned.
Okay, great.
So, you bring us to Yishat Shalom, Eretz Yisrael?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Seeing other people. Probably Uzi Bitan, Miriam Bitan.
Oh, yes, yes.
Shmuel Amasi, Udina Amasi.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Uh-huh. How do you get it all in 1 week?
They would run in.
Yeah. Is Rona coming, by the way? No, she can't make it. Is she feeling okay?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, we're on top of Omid Aleph at the top of the page, but I'm summarizing the last thing that we learned last week, okay? Okay. I'm summarizing the bottom of Daf Hey on the base and leading to the top of Omid Aleph on the bottom. Okay? Alright. So, the Mishnah then states specifically that in the case of this woman who has been suspected and warned, etc., etc., but if the husband died before taking her to Shalayim, then in that particular case, she gets chalitza from his brother in case, as we said before, she has no children and the brother-in-law and her husband has a brother, but she does not marry him through Yibum. And the Gemara wanted to know, why shouldn't she? Why shouldn't she be available as a wife through Yibum, right? Marry the brother-in-law. So we had, at this point, two different explanations by Rabbi Yosef. Explanation number one was based on the verse where it says Ve'yotzeh mebeisom, that when she leaves his home, then she is to go and become the wife of another man. Alright? So the point that he was making was that the word acher is there for a very significant reason, namely to indicate the fact that she has to, if she's going to marry, it has to be to an ish acher, in other words, a person other than the husband's brother. This is the way he interpreted. Of course, one of the difficulties with it is simply the fact that the pasuk itself deals really with the case of divorce rather than with sota. But the answer is that in this particular case, the reasoning is that he is, where she is already, considered as a sota. At least she's been warned, she's been told not to go into seclusion with, the man whom her husband warns her against and so on. So it's as if she had already committed something, an Erba's Dover or something like that, and therefore, as a result, it's not right for her to be married to him, because the verse singles out the word Acher. This was explanation number one that he gave, even though it was not 100% satisfactory, because according to Abaye, so why shouldn't she? After all, she hasn't been accused of anything yet. I mean, nothing happened, so in that case she should be able. But the Mishnah states specifically no. Alright, then there's another one. It says over there the Ista Amrei, another explanation about what did Rabbi Yosef say. So the second explanation is that, again, based on the verse, we also the base of the whole voice of the Shacher, right? So here the question is, why should she leave the house? In other words, why should she be divorced by the husband? Or why should he put her away, that she doesn't live with him anymore? So the answer is because the Lola destroy the basin. She should not destroy his home. How to destroy the home? So as we read the Rashi last week, that we see that in the previous page that they spoke about Zidnusa, that adultery is like a worm that eats away, like in the cabbage or the carrot or whatever, the retok, But the point is that it destroys it. And so therefore, improper conduct on the part of the wife will also destroy the home. Okay? So, Abayit objected, as we see at the second line from the bottom on the previous page. He says, why shouldn't she? Omalei Abayit, lo elamiyato, he says, the acher lo zedosei, the listerei levesei. So let her not marry anybody, because if she's already suspected of destroying one home, so what guarantee do we have that she won't destroy another home, right? So the answer that Rabbi Yosef gave to him is, no, we cannot force somebody to marry her against his will. In other words, we can't say to the Yobam, you know, because Abaye is objection, why can't she marry the Yobam, right? So we can't say to the Yobam, you must marry her, because mitzvahs yibum kodemus is what we had last week in the Rashi, the last thing that we didn't read good. But anyway, this is what we had, that he said, you know, that you can't force a yobam to marry her against his will, because in the final analysis it's no mitzvah to marry her off to the yobam under the circumstances where, you know, she has been suspected of destroying his brother's home. Okay? The Yikud Amri. Now we are on the top line over there. Okay. The Yikud Amri, and there are those who say a different interpretation of what Rav Yosef was arguing. He says, Amar Rav Yosef, he says, HaKosov Keroi Acher. The Pasuk himself, comes along and says that a second husband for her is an Acher. Right? And why? She'ein ben zugin shorishin, because he is not really like the equal. This is how we have to understand the word ben zug in this particular case. Literally, you know, a person who is coupled together. It's not really the equal in this particular case of the shorishin, of the first husband that she had. The one, you know, who wants to get rid of her because he accuses her of infidelity. Why? Shazer hotzi rishon beiso, because the first one got rid of Risha, or if you wish, a Risha, right? An evil woman in his home. They got rid of evil in his home. Bezech this Risha, the second beiso. And the second guy takes it now into his home by marrying her, right? So, if we say, in other words, that the second husband is only getting a bad bargain to begin with, so viat amrit is yabim nami yifume, you want to tell me that therefore she should yet get yibum from the brother-in-law? Why should he be stuck, in other words, with someone who is a rishon? So amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, wait a minute, I got an objection. He says, elo miyato. If this is the case, let's examine this a little further. This says the Acher Umeis Padevonim. Let's say that she does marry somebody else, right? And then the second husband dies without having any children, right? Lotus Yabi, you want to tell me now that she should not get Yibim from the new brother-in-law? Da'akosukro Acher, because of the fact that the Pasuk calls him Acher, Ish Acher, is that the reason why? Abedahai, you know, concerning this one, so Mihor, the shame tov, Avakaima. How can you say something like that when it could be that in connection with I in this case means the second husband, nevertheless, maybe she has developed a good reputation living with the second husband. So in that case, why should we object to the fact that if the second husband dies without ever having produced any children with her, that in that case that she should marry the Yibum. She now has, in other words, restored her reputation, and that being the case, it should be considered a mitzvah to marry her. So this is how the argument stands right now. Okay, let's take a look at the Rashi up to this particular point, beginning with Akosu Kroy Achim. Okay, says Lemishanosapot, right? Pasuk calls her Acher in connection with the one who married her. The Yat Amrit, and you say to Stabi that she should get given. Is Rami Alei Balkoche, and force the Yovim to marry her against the will. So then, as we see, Abaye comes along and he says, so suppose in this is Acher that she's married to a second guy, right? Sheger Shomisha, where the first husband actually has divorced her. Shemotaba Evas Dabor, right? Vinisa, and he found something that he didn't like in her, right? He found something literally lewdness in her. So Vinisa, and then she wants to get married again. So Lotus Yabim, she shouldn't get married to the Yabim, to the brother in law. Hashto Name Acheru, because now he is also an Achim. Vyain Ben Zuga Shel Rishon, and he's not the same as the first one. Im Yisoeno, if he marries her. The Karam is Lezer Alei B'mitzvahs Yibam, and you're forcing to have mitzvahs Yibam in the case of the second husband. So, Gabi Dehai says he is Acher as far as Achim Shalzeh. But the Shem Tov Havakaimo, in other words, she has developed a good reputation living with the second man. The Yikol Amemo, we could say, not only that, the Hodrobo, that she did to Shuvah. The Yain Korui Acher, and she's no longer deserving of the word Acher. Elo Shadosa Mitocha Munos Ogerushin Almisha Kilkalo Tachto. But rather, he marries her either as a widow or as a divorcee if she has committed something against him. So at any rate, as we can see how the argument is running right now, that with Rav Yosef, he's trying to justify the fact that the Mishnah says that coalesces with all these Yavetz. Whereas Abaye keeps on putting up these questions to show that, in his opinion, none of the reasons that we have advanced so far should really justify what the Mishnah said, namely that she should be able to marry the Yavetz. But as we saw, there are also three different scenarios that were presented. So along comes Rava now, and he has his own opinion. Rava Omar, he says, Kal v'chomer, he says, I can prove to you with a Kal v'chomer that Im ne'esra v'muto lo, v'osa lo l'kol shekein. He says, if we accept the previous reasoning, then we will have to say that, hi, how are you? If she has become prohibited to her husband, who was permitted to marry her. In other words, we're talking about the first husband. As we said before, what happens, the minute that something happens, and he has warned her, and he says, you violated it by secluding yourself with the man. So at that particular point, as we've already said, she is now prohibited to live with him as husband and wife. She can't live with him anymore. Not until he takes her to Yerushalayim, and he has to go through the ordeal of the Mayim HaMacharedim. Whereas we had said that if, let's say, he had failed to warn her, then she not only, continues to live with him, or if no witnesses ever showed up, then in that case too, she would continue to live with him as husband and wife, and if he was a kohen, she can eat truma and things like that. So we say over here, now look, he was muta lo before, right? He was permitted to live with her, as long as she had a good reputation, and she had not committed something which would make her prohibited to him. So he says, in this, Rabbi Mutala, if she has now become prohibited to her husband, who was permitted to marry her to begin with, so Ba'asa law, Kol Shekein, then in that particular case, in the case of a man who is prohibited to her, all the more reason. So who is the Ba'asa law, Kol Shekein? The answer is the husband's brother. As we stated before, and looking to Rashi at the top, that under normal circumstances, a woman cannot marry her husband's brother. Under normal circumstances. Certainly, let's say that the husband had divorced her. Okay? Would she be permitted to marry a husband's brother? Absolutely not. This is considered, you know, a case of one of the aroyas, okay, going down the list of prohibited marriages. The only time that she could marry the husband's brother is only under the circumstances of yibum. And that is a special law that the Torah set, you know, in order to keep the original husband's name alive in case there are no children. Okay. So, right now, the brother-in-law is prohibited. So, if the brother-in-law is prohibited, in other words, he is also law, so how can we say that she should marry him through Yibam afterwards? When she has first become Nesra, she has already become prohibited to the husband's brother. So in that case, we should say, no kosher cane, all the more reason that she should be prohibited from marrying the brother-in-law, the yovel. Okay? Alright. So, Rava now then has this theory of Imnesra the Mutar law, right? Then the Otsalor the kosher cane. She is prohibited. In the case of somebody, you know, who was to begin with permitted to her, certainly to someone who is prohibited to her, all the more reason that she can't marry him. So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says, wait a minute, I dispute that statement. Elomiyat, that's the case. Let's take the case of Kain Godom, Shekideshes Walmono, Vomeis. The Kain Godom betrothed a widow, and then he died, right? V'yeshlo ach kohen hedyo. And he has another brother, naturally he's a kohen, but naturally he's a kohen hedyo. He's, you know, one of the ordinary kohen. In other words, anybody other than the kohen gadol is a kohen hedyo, okay? They have high ranks and so on, like, let's say the skan, in other words, the person who is like second in command to the Kohen Gadol, or the Meshuach Melchama. In other words, he's appointed sort of like a temporary Kohen Gadol to lead the armies of the victory and things like that. But nevertheless, as far as the reference to the Kohen Gadol himself, there's only one Kohen Gadol. Everybody else would fall into the category of Kohen Gadol. All right. So they say, let us suppose, says Abaye, that the Kohen Gadol betrothed a widow, he died, and he has a brother who's a Kohen Hedyo, right? So, lo tisyabe, we would have to say that she is not allowed to marry the brother-in-law, right? Why? He says, if there's a b'guta law, but also lo le kol shekhen, right? If she is prohibited to one who is permitted to her, so the Osimov, somebody who is prohibited to her, like all she can, all the more reason that she can't marry him. So she can't have him. Yeah.
What's the problem?
Right, okay. Problem is
that's
called
Kavachomer, especially the way Rashi frames it.
Yeah. So that's called Kavachomer, but it's based upon a fallacy. Fallacy is, can the Kohen Gadol marry an Almana?
Yes. It's chal. The kedushin is chal.
That's correct. You're absolutely right. The kedushin is chal.
Right.
But he's required to divorce her.
Correct.
Right.
So.
Because he can't live with her.
Right.
Right. It's a violation of the Torah. Okay.
Ain't nothing on it. The less it's limited than the brother
kind
of.
Right.
I don't
but
think that's
why I say
logical.
It's it may be logical, but it's theoretical. I mean, Abaye is arguing theory.
That's exactly right.
Theory.
That's the way
yeah.
we elucidate principles.
Right. Okay. All right. Why don't we take a look at the Rashi right now? Okay. Right. He says, all the more, that the in their seres mistira, that if she has now become prohibited to the husband by virtue of the fact that he warned her not to seclude herself, and she went and she secluded herself, right? Stirazu. Then Mutalo Bivalo, in the case of one who had been permitted to her, namely her husband, Shahoya Mutalo, finished kalkulo achshav b'nisuin, and now the marriage has gone kaput, right? They oser alav because she is now prohibited to live with him, as we said before. You know, once she secluded herself, then in that case she can no longer live with her husband and wife. So the oser lo, the hainu yivoma, in the case of a brother-in-law, shehu oser lo b'chaye ba'lo, who is prohibited to her during the lifetime of her husband, like all she came, all the more reason. So that's what the Suya Harisha, that the marriage of the first one are prohibited, you know.
That the Suya Harisha is the Lohogian Shenesru. The Suya Harisha is Shlulis Yavim, Mikoach Osan and Nesuin.
Right.
That Nesuin Harisha should never be used to validate a new liaison. It's an excellent way to frame the Kal V'chomer.
Mm-hmm.
That, because you would use that Nisuin
right.
to permit Yibum. That's the only way
right.
she. So that Nisuin that you are looking to use to permit her, it doesn't permit her to the Mutter law, and now you're going to use that to permit her to somebody who would otherwise be usher to her?
Right. Right.
It's just a fabulous way to frame
it,
isn't
right.
it?
Very good.
No, but that's what makes
right.
And that's what allows you to frame
The next question. Right, okay. So it says Shekidosh as Ramona, right? He betrothed her, he married her. She has Surah Lov, who is prohibited to him because as we know, the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry with. It's only allowed to marry the Sula. A virgin. So Lotus Yabim Bekir Kabachum is it. On the basis of this Kabachum, she should not fall then to the Yavam. In this world, she was prohibited to begin with because she could live with the Kohen Gadol and so on. Well, the common Mephorish, and afterwards they're going to say, my Nesra, my Mutala. A little bit later, we'll try to give it more of a definition. What do we mean by Nesra, that you know she is prohibited, and what do we mean Mutala, that he is permitted to her? Hello, Asur Hayyamitla. So, after all, why do they use the word Mutar when, in the final analysis, the Kohen Gadol was what? He was prohibited from marrying her in the first place. So, Ella, that's the case. Let's try different kalvachomers. That's a bite. Okay? So now they say that Sarah, she is prohibited. Yes, but Asirah Ayuma. In other words, there is a standing prohibition against a widow marrying a Kohen Gadol. So all the more reason then that she should be also prohibited from marrying the Kohen Gadol's brother. Okay. Mutala. Why do you use the expression Mutala, that he is permitted to her? Osula. When in the final analysis we want to say that the husband is prohibited to her from the moment, as we said before, that you know she started in with monkeying around over there with Stira over there. In other words, concealing her, you know, going into seclusion and so forth. Okay? Osula. Elo Ashes Kohen Shenensa. So therefore it goes into a different application altogether. Says, let's take the case of the wife of a Kohen who was violated. She was raped by somebody. Bombes. And then her husband, the Kohen, died. Okay? The Yeshle Och Cholo. And he has a brother who is disqualified from practicing the kohuna. Okay, for what reason? Obviously, because he himself was the offspring of an illegitimate liaison, according to
the
other point.
Right, Ben Grusha.
Right, exactly. Could be a Ben Grusha, Ben Zaino, whatever it may be. Okay,
or a Ben
might be even.
Pardon me. Ben Almanet to Ben Gadol.
Yes, correct. That would also be a halal, absolutely. And then the fourth possibility is that he married a geor.
Right.
And, you know, because as we learned in the Kedushin, you know, that the geor is by the Chachamim. Decided that that falls in the same category as the side of the Bible, okay? Because of what she could have been beforehand, and so on. So, Lotus Yabeim, so she should not fall to this brother who is the Chol, if he is now the brother-in-law, excuse me, right? So, Imne Swab Mutalah, but also Lord Lakolshake. So, this would seem to be another application of the same idea, that inasmuch as to begin with it wasn't right, because what is the din, first of all, about a Ashes Kohen who is violated? In that particular case, technically he cannot live with her anymore, and certainly she would not be able to have Truma or anything like that, okay? This is in order to preserve the purity of the Kohen, okay? So they say the reason why we don't bring it in over here is for a different reason. It says, Ernes the Yisrael Mishra Shari. In the case of somebody who is not a Kohen, if the wife was violated, then he still continues to live with her. There is no such prohibition. So if that's the case, the Gavi Dahai, Lekar Asur. And then in this particular case, there would not be any isser, any prohibition against her marrying a man other than a Kohen. That would be the prohibition, but not to marry any other kind. She's permitted to, because of the fact that in the case of a non-Kohen, then in that case, Inus is not does not render her prohibited to a husband. All right, let's take a look again at the Rosh. Okay. Okay. Aishas Koheshenensa. All right. Ella. Achipar. This is the title. This is the explanation it gets. It says Aishas Kohen Shenensa. The wife of a Kohen who was violated, who was raped, the Nesra love, and she therefore becomes prohibited to the husband. The Ashes Kohen Asura Afilu Ba'anis, because the wife of a Kohen is prohibited to her husband even in the case of Ba'anis. I mean, after all, they're not talking, you know, that she wanted, that she enjoyed, you know, she wanted to have a liaison with another man. We're talking about the fact that actually she was raped. Right. So, but nevertheless, as we said, there has to be a different, a higher standard for the Kohen, so that therefore, if she was raped, and in that case, she is Nesarola, she is prohibited to the to the Kohen of her husband. Abol Ashes Yisroel, but the wife of an ordinary Israelite, Muteris, she is permitted. Dichsiv, as it says, Eloin is possible. In other words, literally, she wasn't caught. But what do you mean, not possible? It means that she wasn't violated. Okay? On is possible, but, of course, I mean, the application of it, even is possible, is, if you remember again, with the idea of the soka. In other words, she was not raped. She was voluntarily entering into a liaison with the man against whom the husband subsequently wanted, you know, not to have anything to do, right? That's what he was supposed to. But Hon is also, but let's say that she was raped by somebody, then in that case, Muteris, and she would be permitted to the husband. Umidichsiv, and since it's written, the he and she, so he says, Mi utavu. This is in order to give us an exclusion to this rule that we just put down. Umashbach. We learn the Yeshacheris, that there is another woman, Shafilin is Fosa Asura, that even if she is violated, right, then she is still prohibited. Namely, in what case does it happen? It happens if she is married to a Kohen. Okay. The
then we said, well, maybe Yeshlo Achiv, he has a brother, Me'oviv, in other words, from his father, but the Hu Kolol, and he is a Kolol. Why? Shenola Me'oviv in Agrusha, because he was married, his father, he was born to a Kohen who had married a divorcee. And his Kalil in Hakuna. As a result, he became literally profane. In other words, he could no longer function, as a full-fledged Kohen. Okay? Umutar, and he is permitted to marry Benoshim Hapsulas Lekuhuna. He is permitted to marry women who cannot be married to a Kohen. In other words, he would be permitted, for example, to marry a Gerusha. Okay? He would be permitted to, to marry a Chalutza. Chalutza also cannot, be permitted to marry her. Kedeksir b'kohanim, as we learned concerning Kohanim Hanosim b'sulois, who marry women who cannot be married, that they are literally, they are possible, they are unfit for being married to a Kohen. So it's written over there, Velo Yechalil Zara, that he should not, in other words, a Kohen should not cause his children to become Chalolim, in other words, to become, no longer functioning as Kohanim, no longer acting or entitled to the status of being a Kohen. So Alma, we see that Zaro Cholol, that his child is a Cholol, but as we said before, if that's the case, then in that case, in other words, if he himself is a Cholol, then in that case he no longer is under the obligation to marry only those who a Kohen can marry. He can now marry those whom the Torah prohibits to a Kohen, since he no longer has the status of a full-fledged Kohen. So, says Lotus Yavim, I wanted to say that the woman was forced. So, Mekalvachom is that. Im nesru bebe'ila zu lebalo, shoyemut alo, yivomo, it's really like almost a repeat of what we've been saying before, that as a basis of this Kal V'chomer, namely that in Nesra, the Mutala, so certainly Kol Shekein, the Osalon. So he says, as far as this Kal V'chomer is concerned, if she is prohibited, the Ilazu, the Va'alot, by virtue of the fact that she had relations with her husband who was permitted to her to begin with, so be a Voma. As far as her brother-in-law, her also-law, the Isa Shoah, who at this particular moment was prohibited to her because her husband was alive and certainly the culture came, all the more reason she this will love the sweet. Okay. That he's not allowed to marry the brother, because the Yavam does not have the authority to contract marriage under those circumstances. So why did we slap it in? So the answer is because we wanted to make a point about the woman who had been violated was not married to a Kohen. Lekol Yisur, as far as the case of Yisrael, the Etzlo, who had the Gomer, and as far as he's concerned, it's completely permissible. The Yain's a Kal V'chomer, and therefore it's not a Kal V'chomer. Avol, Zinso B'Tzon Hamal, B'Zinso B'Ratzon. However, where the woman actually has committed adultery willingly, in other words, she wasn't violated, but she willingly entered into a liaison with another man. Then in that case both the husband and his brother are equal in this prohibition. Yim Hoyeso Tachto, if, you know, she was still married to the husband. So Kal Bechomer, Sharei Machmas Nisuin Avishonim, in his Kekes the Yibun, Yim Al Abal, Niskalkalo, Kal Bechomer the Yibun. Which would mean,